Tonight, James geeks out. Mike advocates for the apocalypse. And our guest listens patiently as two idiots trying to mumble their way through a show.
Hey, this is James from SorrelPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike, and we've got an interesting episode coming up today, do we not?
We do. I have on one of my favorite authors of the Day by Day Armageddon series, J.L. Bourne.
Yeah, we're starting a new interview series. So looking forward to all these great interviews that are going to be coming out.
Yeah.
You couldn't see me, but I was dancing like Butthead.
Yeah. So every once in a while we get into like moods where we just want to interview people. And that's what we're in. I'm trying to book lots of interviews. Hold on a second. God damn it, it's my show. I'll do what I want.
That's a lovely attitude you got.
I have sort of like three dream guests to have on the show. Mike's wife just came in with bacon and eggs. Where's my damn bacon?
I can only cook so much at a time.
She made me my breakfast.
Yeah.
We're just wrapping up.
Yeah. So I have three dream guests, Mike, to have on the show. Like, it's like, you know, if obviously your dream guest would be like Jeremy May, Clarkson, whatever. My three dream guests would be Jack Spirico, Tim Ferriss, and Rob Wolf.
Ow!
I Twittered Rob Wolf the other day. It was like, hey, you should come on. You should summit and come on our show. He was like, I have a new book coming out in 2017. Hit me up. Like, first of the year. Which technically is only like 5 months away.
Yeah.
So he's already like, I will come on your show. And I'm like, sweet Jesus.
That's one,
yeah. Tim Ferriss won't respond to me on Twitter. Tim Ferriss!
Tim Ferriss!
Yeah, jackass.
What about Jack Spirko?
I'm even friends with him on Facebook, and I haven't even asked him. I don't...
He intimidates you, doesn't he?
No, because I've been on his show.
Yeah, I know, but he's kind of a powerful person.
Yeah, it's funny, like, he's good with the interview, but, like, if you're trying to talk to him, like... So after the interview recorded, like, episode 1001, I like it because it's sort of binary numbers. That was my interview. It was
1001?
Yeah. After the interview was over, like, we talked for, like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something. Well, by we talked, I mean he talked at me and I couldn't get a word in. It's like, I'm trying to be like, and I couldn't. Hold on. You should go listen to that episode, Throughout Podcasts, episode 1001, James Burnett. This is back when I still drank. And I was so nervous to be on the show that I smashed like a six pack before the episode began.
Oh my God, you were.
I was drunk.
You son of a bitch.
I was half drunk. I had a working buzz on. That's. I used to not be as comfortable on the mic as I am now.
You stay off the mic.
Off the mic.
Mike is eating bacon.
Yeah. So. Or in case we haven't mentioned it in a while, there's this thing called Zorro Punk Army. You could join, $5 a month. I like money. If you like the podcast, then consider signing up. If not, me and Mike are coming to your house and we're going to punch you in the dick.
Yep, because we want to whoop some ass.
Yep.
And it's your fucking turn next.
Yep. And on that bombshell.
So just fucking remember the Survival Punk Army wants you!
Yes.
Now, the person we're interviewing today is author J.L. Bourne, author of the Day by Day Armageddon book series. It's a post-apocalyptic zombie book series.
In the diary, in like a journal style, so like you're reading like journal entries by J.L. Bourne, who's a career naval officer. And with that, let's jump into it.
Yep, so on that bombshell, here is our interview with J.L. Bourne.
So it's my great pleasure today to welcome author J.L. Bourne from the Day by Day Armageddon series onto the show. J.L., how are you?
I am happy to be here and proud to be on your show today.
Awesome. Do you prefer to be called J.L.?
J.L.'s fine. What?
J.L., okay. Awesome. So let's see. I've got a couple questions lined up for you today. First of all, who is J.L. Bourne?
Well, hold on. Let me click over to my bio so I can read it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a military officer. I've been in the Navy 21 years, and that's who I. That's my job. That's not really who I am. Who I am is just a country boy from Arkansas, one of the first in my family not born in a dirt floor cabin. And
wow.
Yep, that's right. And so I finished up high school back in the 90s. And I thought, you know what, I kind of want to get out of Arkansas and see what's going on out there. So I joined the Navy and ended up staying in for a couple of decades. And in the last decade, I had a desire to start writing. So I began doing that and posting my work for free online. And some people liked it. And I ended up publishing some of my work. And that leads me to where we are today as a writer slash military guy on your show, talking to your fans. And hopefully some of mine are listening out there, too. And letting them know a little bit more about myself and about what your show has to offer. And here we are.
Awesome.
Now, a lot of our show is about prepping and survival. Was it the military that kind of got you into that?
Well, no. I mean, again, I grew up with on a wood stove and well water and barely electricity, a party line where I didn't have a phone for the first part of my time living in Arkansas. And then when we had a phone, we shared it with five neighbors on a party line where if it rang.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. So, I mean, my mom handed me a 22 when I was 12 years old and said, hey, go on out there and have some fun, you know, because I was out in the middle of the woods there in Arkansas. And I did, you know, I went out there and shot some game and had some fun out there and learned a little bit about how to live out in the woods on your own through family and friends. And that's kind of how I grew up in a very rural setting.
So you were just born into the whole thing.
So. I think so. And then, you know, I joined the military and then eventually they sent me to SEER school as part of my aviation training, survival, evasion, resistance and escape school up in Maine. And then my job led me to advanced SEER school over on the western side of the United States in Spokane, Washington. So that kind of put a little bit more of a refinement on what I'd learned in Arkansas. And yeah, sure. That's how I got into it.
Right. I found out about your work because back in 2008 or so, I joined up on the Zombie Squad forums, and I believe you used to be on that forum. I haven't been on there in years myself. And some people were like, hey, and they said your username. I don't remember it. They're like, hey, he wrote a book, and so I went and checked it out on I had – what was it? Sony's version of a Kindle back then.
Oh, okay.
With the e-ink. And I couldn't like – well, I felt that – so Day by Day Armageddon, the first one, really like worked well on the first generation like e-readers, being that, you know, it's paper and didn't look – you know, there's no pictures and stuff in it. But that got me hooked.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's no pictures in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because it's a journal style, in case you don't know. So it with the early like e-ink paper, like the journals, it looked good on that. Like it looked natural, and so I got it was a page turner for me.
Yeah, it was a raw effort. My first one was a labor of love, and there were some scribblings in there and some things that kind of immersed the reader into that world through the eyes of the protagonist who remains unnamed to this day. It very well could be you. And that's just, that's how that went.
Yeah. I'm about halfway through Ghost Run right now. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But when I was writing up the questions for the show, I was like, wait a second. Does the main character have a name? Like, I had to Google it real quick. I was like, do they mention it? And I just forgot. The only thing you've ever seen him called in the series is Kilroy as like a nickname here and there.
That's true.
That's interesting. So for the listeners that don't know, tell us about the Day by Day Armageddon series.
Okay. The Day by Day Armageddon series started way back in, I want to say 2002 or 2003. I started writing serials of the first Day by Day Armageddon and posting them online for free for people to read. And then once I published enough of it online, and I had a huge interest and a huge following, I decided to take it over into the published realm and publish it as a paper book. And it saw some success, enough so to garner the attention of one of the major five publishers, Simon & Schuster in New York City. And they contacted me about a book deal. And after some deliberation and some talks about creative controls, I agreed to the book deal and ended up writing four books for them. And that's kind of how that went. Regarding the series itself, it's a journal written by most of the three of them out of the four are journal style, written by our protagonist, seen through the first person as he moves through a post-apocalyptic landscape. And it starts out from the first one is right before the anomaly occurs, and then all the way till the fourth one to where we're dealing with it years after the anomaly.
Now, what inspired you to get into writing zombie fiction specifically?
I get this one a lot, and it's a pretty simple answer. It's not really – I mean, it's not really that nebulous. It's not nebulous. So really what got me into it is back in 03, 02, 03, there was some zombie fiction out there, and I've been a fan of this genre since Dawn 78, right? So since I saw that, you know, snuck the VHS tape and put it in there when my parents went to bed so they wouldn't know that. And I've been a fan since then. So I was reading some fiction, and I thought, you know what, this fiction doesn't really capture the realism that I would want to read if I was, you know, one of the mainstream people out there reading zombie literature. So what I did was I said, I want to give it a shot. I'm going to try it on my own to make it as realistic as possible. So, you know, despite there being zombies, take the zombies away from it. Everything else I wanted to be realistic. And I wrote Day by Day Armageddon.
Hmm. Yeah, it's my favorite zombie fiction that I've read so far, because some of it's just retarded. I mean, Day by Day Armageddon and World War Z are pretty much my favorites, and beyond that, like, you just get to just terrible writing.
Well, you do mean the book, not the movie.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about the movie.
the thing is, you have a lot of people out there that love zombies and their heart's in the right place. They want to write about it, but and then some of them do a great job. A lot of them do. I mean, most of them are better than I am. But you really have to have at least a novice grasp on survival and on, you know, scary black rifles to be able to write intelligently about this situation.
Mm-hmm. I was sent one book for review. I won't even name it. And the guy, obviously, like, it was a good, well-written virus story where it starts killing people off.
Yeah.
But when he describes firearms, like, you can tell he may not have ever shot one. He was like, and I pulled the trigger and his body flew through the air like from, you know, a handgun. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What?
That's the kind of thing that probably puts off some of the hardcore readers that actually know a lot about this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's some crazy things going on in my novels. Some of it's true that people, you know, some of it's really, really exists, and some of it is things that I write about that I know will happen in the future that just haven't yet.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you've just released – well, actually, so I think when this podcast comes out, which will be Wednesday, I don't know, the 23rd or something, or whatever the Wednesday is following today,
okay.
I think the book will be out by then. So tell us about your new book, Ghost Run.
Okay, Ghost Run, honestly, and a lot of writers say this, but honestly, I've got a full-time job already. I'm a military officer.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting here trying to scam people into buying this. Honestly, this one is my favorite one. It really is. I don't know why. I read it for the first time after I wrote it a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And when I read it, I was like, man, this is my favorite Day by Day Armageddon. And here's why. You have a survivalist, not really by training. He is trained in the military, but he's not really a survivalist, a book smart survivalist. He's a person that's survived the apocalypse for years. And this book is his first person view of how he's surviving in a post-apocalyptic world overrun by the undead. Some of them radiated and some of them, you know, a little more agile than the others. And then we have technology thrown in that exists today, but it doesn't exist in the form that we see it in the book, but it will soon. So you have something that's we're on the bleeding edge of technology, and you have the main character, and you have modern firearms technology thrown in a survival situation, and an environment on the Gulf Coast of the United States, a hurricane-stricken Gulf Coast, and it just makes for a great story, and I love it.
I have to agree. Like from what I've read from it so far, it is my favorite so far. Which, not to take a shot against you, but like the third one, Hourglass, was kind of it felt different.
Yeah, it was different. It was very different. It was written in the traditional novel format,
right?
And it was written in a way to tell a story and expand the universe in a way that I couldn't do it in the first person. So it kind of set up Ghost Run for me. It did the legwork in the setup.
Yeah, I mean, it did a good job putting that story there. But I'm glad that we're back to Kilroy by himself, and his thoughts.
Yeah, he's by himself for 95%. No spoilers.
Yeah,
95% of the book. So I know that's what my readers want to see. They want to see the lone survivor out there doing his thing. And I answered the call with Ghost Run, and I think the people are going to be really pleased.
Which is sort of opposite. Like generally, like because I'm sent books to review fairly often, and a couple of them are like lone bug out type things, and sometimes I'm just like whatever. Like with Day by Day Armageddon, it's different. Like I'm actually like okay, like it sucks me in, and then some books I'm like. It seems unrealistic in a way. I don't know. You do a good job of convincing us that he could make it.
Well, the only reason this character can make it, I think, is because he doesn't take ridiculous chances that you would see in other Hollywood productions and some other works. He does not take unnecessary risk, and neither would you.
Right.
Yeah, and it's so easy for authors, studios to throw their characters into situations like that where they're taking those just because, it looks a lot better on screen or whatever.
Yeah.
When in reality, most of those people would be dead by the halfway point of their movies or books.
Oh, yeah.
Because nothing just ever works out that perfectly for everybody all the time.
I'm playing this great game when I have the time. It's a $30 game. It's not really that expensive. It's called 7 Days to Die, I think is the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Minecraft with zombie, with real, better done than Minecraft.
Oh,
it's a world building game where you got to eat food to survive and build your shelter so the zombies can't, come and eat you. And it is one of those games that's like, okay, this is kind of done right. If I don't eat, I'm going to starve. If I don't knock out these stairs, they're going to come up and get me. If I don't make this out of metal instead of wood, they're going to break through and take me out if I don't stay quiet. So it's kind of a neat game. So you guys maybe check that out. It's like $30.
That actually does sound interesting.
Yeah, it really does.
Graphics suck, but it's
yeah.
But it's a great game.
Then again, Minecraft's graphics suck, if you ask me.
Yeah,
but it's like the most popular game on the planet.
I think 7 Days to Die is a very underrated game. It's pretty cool. I think you should check it out.
All right, I'll put a link in the show notes, and we'll check it out. So, how do you make the characters in your series so unique and interesting? Like, do you base them on friends or what do you do?
No, I mean, not really. I may borrow some of the names, but the characters are constructs in my mind of just characters that I make up, you have a lot of time to reflect and think about things when you're by yourself in the middle of the woods in Arkansas growing up. So I developed a wild imagination, I think, in my childhood and was able to manifest that in some of my writing, luckily, and it worked out for me. So I'll say, let's pick a character. Sayin, one of the characters in one of the novels there, he is a product of my time in the GWAT, okay? So like Global War and Terror. So this character is I don't want to spoil it for people that haven't read it yet, but he is someone that could be from a shady past that came from overseas. And that I guess my time in the GWAT influenced that character. And John is a mixture. If you take John and the main character, both of those characters, I have put a little bit of myself in, a little bit. So if you put those two characters together, John, very different than the main character, and then mix those two characters together, there's a lot of the attributes of, from myself I put in there just to make it more realistic when I'm writing the first person.
I originally had a question and I scrapped it about Sighing, and not to give spoilers away, but I was thinking, I was like, I bet you've caught some flack from the survival community on having that character in a positive light in the book. And I'm like, because I know some people are some survivalists are kind of picky about that.
Yeah, some people are, you know, and maybe they're right. I don't know, but I put him in there. It's my work.
Exactly, and I liked his character, so let's that one. Let's see
here.
All right, so I'll read this one.
Yeah, you can do that.
So I've noticed in Ghost Run a lot, since Kilroy, the main character, is, you know, sort of wandering around by himself the whole book. He's in his headspace a lot, and you sort of hear his thoughts, and it's fun. Like, there's a lot of like sort of pop culture references and like weird daydreams, and it's kind of what I imagine, you know, like if I was wandering around the apocalypse, like these are the sort of things that like run through my head, like, oh, those gators are going to eat me, like they're probably behind me, you know, and like weird pop culture references.
That's one of my favorite scenes. Is the, I don't want to give it away, but there's a cool alligator scene in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, so yeah, let's see.
What was the question? I'm sorry. I got sidetracked about the alligators.
Yeah, I have it here as a, I need to make this into a question.
You didn't even write down a question. You're like, I love the rambling pop culture thoughts in Kilroy's head.
Yeah, to me it makes it more relatable, whereas, you know, some people are, you know, it's all like, This, you know, there's not a question there. Let's move on.
You just went fanboy on him, dude.
I had a question there in my mind, you know.
Well, what was it?
I don't know. I just.
Have you read the part where the, there's something in the trees after a hurricane surge water?
I don't think, where am I at now? Yep. I
not
am.
There yet. I don't think.
No, he, yeah, no.
All right.
I haven't got there yet.
Sorry for people listening to this that we're talking around this. I shouldn't do that, but there's some parts I'm really excited about in the book, and sometimes I get carried away.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the listeners feel the enthusiasm that we both have, and they're like, well, I need to go pick this up right now.
Yeah, I think we're being just vague enough to be like, what are they talking about? I got to read this book now.
Yeah. I'm pretty nitpicky. Like, if I hear spoilers, I'll never, like, it ruins it for me. Like, I, you know, to a certain degree, like, some spoilers I'm okay with, but, like, if people start talking, I'm like, no, stop. I don't want to hear it.
Well, I'm the opposite. I don't care. I don't care. You could tell me the entire plot line of a movie. I'm still going to watch it.
Have you found, yeah. Anything robotic in the book yet?
Oh, yeah. Okay, no. He's definitely made it to Tallahassee.
Okay. All right.
Which is pretty vague, and yeah. that's not a spoiler. No. He's made it there, and he's seen other people-ish.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, so, which, yeah. So, let's see.
That one's not a question either.
I can make this a... So, the main character in your book is sort of both the luckiest and unluckiest guy ever. Like, Like, what made you balance that out? Like, I know some people, like, you know, on the forums when I read them, I guess in the first book, when they found Hotel 23, which I guess if you haven't read it by now, you probably should. That, you know, that's sort of like, that sort of prepper, like, zombie fiction aficionado, like, heaven. Like, oh, yeah, I'll just stumble across, like, an abandoned silo and, like, make that my base. which, you know, obviously that is him, like, luckiest, and then, you know... Book two is pretty much his unlucky streak.
Yeah, so that's true. I balanced it out because I really don't like characters that are invincible and the main character, our protagonist, Kill, he gets hurt a lot, and he does have injuries based on the things he's forced to do. And I didn't want that to, you know, there's no sacred cows, you know. Who knows? There's no guarantee that he's going to live forever.
I have thought that too. I'm like, it's a diary, so we could read up right to the moment he dies, and the diary, you know, the journal is left on the ground, and we're reading it, you know, from finding on the ground, which would make me sad, but that's a possibility.
Hey, sometimes the best way to end a book series is by killing the main character. Look at the Odd Thomas series. Spoilers.
Yeah.
But still.
That happened in Cloverfield. I didn't care for it there when it was all like a camcorder that was found on the ground.
What'd you think about that other Cloverfield movie, Cloverfield Lane? I thought that was sick. I loved it.
I haven't seen that one yet.
I might watch it now. I haven't – like it – I didn't watch it because it didn't really click with me. but I might check it out. Because it seemed like in the trailers they were kind of like making John Goodman to be like a prepper survivalist and crazy – which is what the media loves to do. Like, oh, you're a survivalist. You must be crazy.
I just like John Goodman when he's crazy. I mean, at the big risky.
Yeah.
I mean, the media likes to do that. But what's going to happen when this stuff really goes down? It's going to be like that episode of The Twilight Zone where they're going to be, you know, blowing the doors off your bunker to get inside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. Different authors have different writing styles. Are you the kind of guy that you set aside certain times of the day, like, okay, at 6 o'clock, I'm going to write, or do you just write what inspiration strikes you?
No, it's not how it works for me because I'm in the military, right? So I have a day job, so to speak. So I have no choice. When I come home, I have to devote 3 hours a night. I have to sit down, mm-hmm. and I have a word count target that I'm going for in order to meet a deadline that I have with a publisher. And I'm very methodical and very serious about it. I'm very rigid with it. I sit down and I look at the screen and I type words and I don't stop until I hit my time. And that's how it works. And I don't have anything outlined out. That's probably one of the questions that someone's going to think, oh, do you outline your story? No, I sit down and I go cold straight through the story and write it from start to finish. I don't outline anything. I don't diagram anything. I just sit down and I write it.
Now, that seems to work pretty good for me from what I can tell from the books, because a lot of people would say that's the hard way to go about it.
Maybe.
Maybe. No, but honestly, I could have bet money that your writing style would be somewhere around what you just told me. One of my best friends is pretty much, he's going to be a lifer in the Army. He's already been in like 14 years now.
Yeah.
No, so I pretty much know that military mentality. Plus, I come from a big military family. If not for my scoliosis getting me kicked out of the Army, I would probably be working on my 20 years right now. So, yeah, kind of know how that goes.
Appreciate your service.
No, I appreciate your service. At least they let you stay in. I threw my back out while I was in basic training, and they found out that my spine's as crooked as a politician, and got the medical discharge. Spent some time at the 95th AG holdover platoon in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, before they finally sent me home.
Wow.
No, so I have the utmost respect for anybody in the military, especially those that, you know. So what kind of action have you seen? What's your military career been like?
Well, I started off as a young E-1 enlisted man, right? So before I joined the Navy, I had a stint – or after high school, I had a stint working in a sawmill, working, you know, for $5 an hour. So I did that for a while, and I felt like that was a spiritual journey for me, working in a sawmill for $5 an hour, slinging the green chain. I really thought, you know, I kind of found myself, and I'm like, hey, this is not it. This is not how J.L. Bourne ends. This is not where it is. Looking around me, seeing the Vietnam vets doing the same job I'm doing, and out there, you know, I'm like, hey, I've got to go do something else. So that's what caused me to join. So I started off as a radioman. So I managed radios, communication circuits, things like that. I was a radioman. And then I wanted to push to be an officer. So I earned my college degree while I was on active duty and applied to officer candidate school and was selected to officer candidate school and became an officer, a while back. So as far as have I seen any action, I'm going to have to say my action has been mostly inside of an aircraft, overland Iraq, doing things to support the action. So that by no means am I going to say that I'm the guy that's on the ground shooting people in the face. My action is just simply being safe at 30,000 feet in an aircraft, doing some things for the effort in an aircraft, safely at 30,000 feet over Iraq.
And you know, there's absolutely zero wrong with that. I don't know if you're like a hockey fan or anything, but Wayne Gretzky, throughout the course of his career, he got a lot more assists getting the puck to other people for them to get the score than he actually got points himself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, any well-oiled machine has to work with all of its parts. Yeah. So,
I mean, I never want to sit here and misrepresent anything. I'm an OIF guy, an OEF guy. I did my time overseas in the sandbox, like most of everybody that served in the past 10 years. And mm-hmm. I served for a few years, had the honor to serve for a few years inside the Beltway working for the intelligence community. And I've had a pretty neat career, a pretty fun career. And the Navy's been great to me. And I had some great experiences. And it's time to probably go next year.
Awesome. Weird, like sort of like off story is I have an ex-girlfriend that was in the Navy for 5 years. She got out, I don't know, a year or two ago.
She was in for 5 years?
She was in for 4 or 5 years.
Huh.
She never once set foot on a boat. Somehow, like, she arranged – she flew, yeah. So somehow she got out, and then she got stationed, like, in Monterey for language training, I think. And then, like, she bounced to, like – she went to Oklahoma because there's a Navy base in Oklahoma for some reason. Or – yeah, I think it was Oklahoma. And then she got stationed on, like, an island paradise in the middle of nowhere that was just, like, a Navy base with some, like, natives. You might know what it is. And then, she never on a battleship. Like, after that, she left. And it was
I mean, there's people that – there are people that spend their whole career in the Air Force and never fly a plane, so –
True. Most of the Air Force, they don't fly. They maintain. They do other things. They have missiles and other nuclear missile command, things like that. STRATCOM. So there's other things that they do. But yeah, I mean, I've had a great time in the Navy. It was fun. Time to go. Some of the things I'm not going to go into here on the podcast, but very interesting career, and I'm happy to have served. And I think it's time for the next chapter.
Absolutely. Now, as a prepper or survivalist, how prepared do you feel that you are at this very moment if, like, say, a zombie apocalypse did just break out?
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm not going to say – I mean, I wish I was a prepper. That's how much I value that term. It's not a dirty word for me. So I wish I was one. I don't know if I can say that I am if you compare me to some of the world-class preppers out there. But I will say this. For a zombie apocalypse, the hurricane shutters are easy to put up. I've got, I think the best weapon in a situation like that is probably going to be a silenced .22 rifle, and definitely covered there with several thousand rounds of ammunition. So and a lot of food to hold up for a few months and some water. Sure, that's good. Got that. I use my swimming pool in the back. There's 15,000 gallons back there as well, and. I could probably hold off if I had to for a while, but in the end, I don't know what would happen. That's a tough call. I wouldn't say I'm a prepper. I would say that I'm prepared to manage the threat.
There you go.
That's the most that any of us can hope for.
Yeah, it's like if you ask any expert if they're an expert, usually they're going to say no. I mean, that's just like. If you find experts, it's like, yeah, I'm an expert. You know they're probably full of shit. it's the way it is. So you just said something about the .22 long rifle as your preferred zombie weapon, which is – so reading this book, and I was going to ask you if 300 Blackout was your choice for a zombie apocalypse because you mentioned that in Ghost Run. And I'd always – like a couple years ago I wrote an article like – my three main things to survive a zombie apocalypse, and my weapon was a subsonic 22 long rifle, or a 22 long rifle with subsonic ammo, because it would make the least amount of noise. And, you know, from a good distance, 22 straight to the brain, it's going to take it out.
Well, I'm sitting here. I just built a new short barrel rifle registered under the National Firearms Act, if you're not familiar. So I think your question is, would you pick 300 blackout in a resource constricted environment where you may not be able to scavenge that round? I think that might be somewhere in the question.
Yeah, well, yeah. Is 300 blackout your choice for zombie apocalypse? If not, what is?
Okay, 300 blackout is a great round. It really is. I've got a couple short barrel rifles in 300 blackout. It's a great round. I love it because you can go from one mag and be quiet to switch to the next mag and go 400 meters. So you can go from super to sub and vary based on your mission, mark your mags. So it's a great round. However, would I want to be that as my only rifle if I had to go out for 100 miles into the Badlands? It depends on the situation, on what I thought I might find myself in. But it could be. But I would want to have a backup with 22 long rifle because you can carry thousands of rounds on your back. Now, you said subsonic 22. My short barrel rifles in 22 are always subsonic, even with bulk ammo, because if you have a short barrel, bulk ammo stays subsonic. So you're not restricted to wait on to find CCI standard velocity. You can just grab anything. It'll be subsonic through a silencer. And so I think that having a few thousand rounds through a short barrel 22 rifle, you could really lay the bodies down with that. You know, if this was a real thing, if zombies were real, you could really do some damage with that. But, you know, I'm not preparing for zombies over here. I'm preparing for Hurricane Katrina type situation because I live 100 meters from the Gulf. So that is my threat. And we could use zombies as a way to make it fun. I think 22 long rifle is a great round. Anybody that would go out there and try to say it's a weak round, it wouldn't do any damage, they don't know what they're talking about. You can take a turkey and put it at 300 yards away with a 22 rifle and put rounds through a turkey. And if it goes through a turkey, it's going to go through you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And for the listeners, in case they don't know, me and Mike aren't actual, like, we don't actually prepare for the zombie apocalypse. We don't think it's going to happen. It is a fun metaphor, though.
Absolutely.
To get people into prepping. You know, it's like, well, what are your zombies? Well, my zombie, you know, you in Florida, obviously your zombie is a hurricane because that's probably what you're going to see, you know.
That's the whole reason that this whole zombie genre is so popular. Everybody likes a problem whose brains you can blow out.
That could be it.
I mean, it's a lot easier to fight a zombie than to fight, like, the Zika virus.
Well, let me flip.
You can't shoot a virus.
Let me flip the script on you, Mike. And I submit to you that a zombie apocalypse is possible, just maybe not in the way that we think of it. Okay?
No, I'm a big advocate. Well, I wouldn't say advocate. I'm not advocating a zombie apocalypse. But, no, I believe a zombie apocalypse could actually happen.
So imagine we have a singularity, right? And we have a situation where we develop AI that becomes self-replicating.
Okay.
This is not insane. Listen to Elon Musk. Listen to Bill Gates. Listen to these guys out there with bigger brains than me, with more money, throwing it at this problem. And they think it's a definite probability, not just a possibility. It's a probability that we develop this AI. We don't know what it's going to be. How can you predict something that goes from a room temperature IQ to a 3000 IQ in a nanosecond? It's very difficult to do that. So I would say that our zombie apocalypse in the future could be something that that's smarter than what we see a zombie, that's faster and never gives up.
Yeah, more like the Terminators and Skynet, like that's
that, or maybe they realize that they can't make a biped robot to do their bidding, so they use smaller robots to infect a human host, and they use the human as the robot.
Yeah. Maximum overdrive when we have like cars running us down to pump gas.
I'm just worried it's going to be Daleks.
Oh, yeah.
Daleks or Cybermen of the Borg.
Something. There was either a scientist or a theorist that came up with a theory that
Did we lose the call?
I'm back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But anyway, yeah. So,
I'm still recording.
Are we recording?
Yeah, it didn't even pause. It's still
says,
okay, yeah.
All right, good. So back to the spam thing. So the robot's like, okay, here's how you did, how you stop the spam. You kill all humans, and there's no more spam. So, I mean, it could be something simple or dumb or some oversight that could cause a problem like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just mentioning that there were some scientists or theorists that came up with a theory, like, I don't know, 200 years ago or something, that, like, mankind will develop technology until the technology becomes smarter than him, in which case we become obsolete and the technology will kill us. And I can't remember the science. Like, he's famous. Like, it's a famous theory of
Asimov?
Yes.
It may not be
Asimov's three laws of robotics. Yeah, I know that.
It may not be the type of zombie apocalypse that all three of us think it is. It could be something worse than we think it is.
Right.
So, yes, it's science fiction. Yes, it's crazy. It's out there. It's an idea. But that's what I do. I'm a fiction author. I think about ideas like that. I have deep think, and some ideas like that are things that I think are a potential threat to our future. It may not be economic collapse. It may not be destabilization of Western culture. It may not be any of the things we think it is. It could simply be something that a switch gets flipped and we have a 4,000 IQ AI out there that wants to kill everybody.
Yeah. So tell me about some of your favorite zombie movies, because we're obviously both fans of the genre.
Well, I would say that Omega Man, which is sort of a zombie movie, more of a vampire movie. I would say Dawn of the Dead, 1978 version. The newer one, I'm not hating on the newer one. It's okay, but I really like.
I didn't care for it.
I really like the classic. You know what I really like about 78 is that feeling in the very beginning. We're in the newsroom and everything's falling apart, right? I think I'll rewind and watch that a couple times before I go forward in the thing. So I like that one. I also like Day. People hate on Day, but I think Day of the Dead's great because in the very beginning, you have the helicopter flying around, right? And and they're looking for some people. And my favorite character is the Hilo pilot, the black dude on there. He is smooth, right? So he's like, I'll set it down, but I'll leave the engine running. If you're not back here, you're liable to have a lousy day. You know,
yeah.
So he's my favorite character. He's my favorite character in that movie. And when they're out there with the bullhorns, this is not a spoiler. This came out in 86. So
no whining about spoilers.
No whining.
So the female character and her boyfriend are out there with the bullhorn trying to find someone. The zombies are filling the streets, right? And the helicopter pilot and the drunk Irish radio guy in there. The helicopter pilot's like, listen, Billy boy, it's a dead place. You can hear it over the engines. Really cool start to that movie. I really like Day of the Dead too. So we've got two movies there. The movie market's flooded with a bunch of crap, as you know. So it's really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard to find some good gems. But every now and then on Netflix, I'll find something good on there. I just don't remember the name of a couple of them, but I found a couple on Netflix that are pretty cool. I bet some of the listeners out there can chime in on it when they listen to this. And comment back to you on what those might be, but the my favorite are those two, Dawn and Day.
Oh yeah, Day had that really good the really good special effect when you saw the zombies like the top of his head get lopped off on the helicopter.
Oh yeah,
I really like that.
That was Dawn. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I think it was Day was the first time that I saw someone like cut off a limb that had been bitten by a zombie to try to stop the infection.
That's right.
I'm a big fan of the Romero work. You're right. There's a lot of just junk being pumped out now. The first 28 Days Later, I really liked. And then 28 Weeks, I thought was crap.
Yeah.
Isn't that have Sandra Bullock in it?
No, different movie.
Different movie, and that wasn't Sandra Bullock.
Oh my goodness.
There's a lot of them on Netflix.
Yeah.
So we're about to the end of my list of questions here.
Okay.
What do you think like an overlooked item in the bug out bag is? Like, I know, and it's not a spoiler, like In Ghost Run, Kilroy uses zip ties a lot, and I'm like, yes, zip ties are amazing.
Yeah, you have to have zip ties. They're light. Anything that you can use for three different things is a must, I think. That's a yes. If something that can be only used for one thing, you really want to question whether or not you need it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I look at it. Some overlooked things to answer your question in a bug out bag besides, you know, Life Straw, iodine tablets. You always want to start with food, water, shelter. Everyone's going to go food, water, shelter, but people don't put their meds, I think. People I run into, they don't put their prescription medicine in their bug out bag. They forget that. So I think that's probably a good thing to have. There's a lot of people out there that are on medication that they need, and they don't put it in their bug out bag. They just think that it's going to be okay if they just run out with their bag and leave their meds at back at the house. It could be serious depending on what it is, you know.
Yeah,
that's an item I've overlooked in my damn bug out bag. I didn't even think about that. I take like several medications a day.
Just ask your doctor if he'll give you an extra prescription, or just tell him like, oh hey, my kids got crazy and they dumped my meds down the sink. Like, can I get a refill for this?
Yeah.
Like the stuff that you're taking, like chronic medicines like that, they don't mind. Like if you're like, hey, I happen to drop my prescription of morphine, can I get another one? No.
Well, unless the medication is a controlled substance, you can refill it any time, as often as you want, as long as you're not running it through insurance, because insurance has guidelines about how often they'll cover stuff. And if you're willing to pay cash for it, most medications you can get it. You can go, let me go ahead and get all 12 months.
I think that's probably the what I would look at there. I'd also look at prescription lenses if anybody wears those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't, but I know people do. There's things like that you don't think about because think about this. If you have that dreaded vision problem where you can't even see the alarm clock when you wake up in the morning, you would have been dead 400 years ago, thrown off a cliff or something. So imagine when we devolve into that 400 year ago mentality. So you're going to want your prescription lenses.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Things like that. I mean, it's not just...
I said
it's not just the guns and the water and the food and the shelter and all that. It's also the little niche things that can really ruin your day if you don't have them.
Yeah, it's I like to sort of like talk about the not as flashy stuff, like, you know, okay, so the gun and stuff, but like what about your bug out paperwork, you know, and the other stuff like that isn't as flashy and cool but needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody could afford, you know, $6,000 night vision goggles and all this other crazy stuff out there. And to be honest, you don't really need it. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice to have, but there's things that you do definitely need, and there's things that are nice to haves.
Yeah.
And all that extra technological things that you bring along, they have pounds. You know, I haven't seen anything that weighs zero yet that I have in my bag. So you're gonna pay for it.
Although I did see, like, sort of weird off topic, but you apparently like science and stuff. There's this eye cancer medicine that has like a weird side effect of giving you like great night vision. And some guy was like taking and I think you have to inject it in your eye. And there's a guy that was experimenting with it for the night vision stuff, and he now has like permanent super night vision. Of course, it turned his eyes black, though. He looks like a weirdo.
What?
Yeah. He has to wear sunglasses the rest of his life, too.
Yeah, that guy.
That's nuts.
So that's. I don't know if I'd go that way, but, you know.
Does he, like, turn his eye into a giant pupil?
Yeah. It's weird, but.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, anyway. That's all the questions I have.
I do have one more question. I mean, I know that the Ghost Run is just coming out, but what's the future look like for JL Bourne? Do you have any other projects in mind that might be coming up?
I don't have anything official. You know, I don't have another contract after Ghost Run to write anything else. I'm just going to see what happens. I've got some ideas in my mind that I'm going to put on paper, and hopefully there's something that my readers want to look at. And I'm just going to keep working and to keep pushing forward to when I get out of the Navy next year. I think I'm going to try to do this full time and see what happens.
Can't wait.
Well, if you do, by some weird chance, use the idea that you came up with earlier in our interview about the AIs and the 4,000 IQ and
nanotechnology into a zombie virus. Name some program Couch Potato, and I'll be really happy. Codename Couch Potato.
Yeah, and or. Yeah. So if you do, like, the next book you do write, if you kill me in it, I'll love that.
Like, oh, you've already been killed in a book.
I want to be killed in lots of books.
Quit being greedy.
Yeah.
I haven't been killed in anything yet.
Yeah. Kill Mike, too.
So let our listeners know where they can find you online and get your books.
And I'm back.
All right, we're not quite sure how long we lost you. I guess it's just a few seconds.
Okay.
We were just talking about in the next book, if you could just kill us off in it, that would be awesome.
But go ahead and tell our listeners, and they're going to hear this twice. Go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can find your books.
Everything, I've dumped it into one place where people can find it easily. It's jlbourne.com, jlbourne.com.
Right. And we will certainly have a link to that in the show notes so people can find it. And, you know, hopefully pick up Day by Day Armageddon. The first book is a fairly quick read, and it's a page turner, so I don't see why people wouldn't just grab it and read it and quickly fall in love.
Yeah, and leaves you wanting more.
It does.
Yeah.
Never mind. I was gonna say I like how occasionally the pages will be different too, because everything you're reading is a diary. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll find, notes from other people and it'll be blood splattered on the page itself.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I like that little throw in there.
That's a nice touch.
But with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. It's been great having you on, JL. I hope to finish the book pretty soon and have a review out this next week. So
I look forward to it, and thank you again for the opportunity to be on your wonderful show, and thanks to your wonderful readers for listening to me drone on for the past 50 minutes.
Awesome. Well, you have a great day, JL, and I'll shoot you an email when it comes out.
Mike, James, have a good one.
Oh, you too. Know. Ladies and gentlemen, that was JL Bourne, author of the Day by Day Armageddon series.